Use of the material on this show does not create an attorney-client relationship. The information contained herein is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only. It should not be construed as legal advice on any subject.
Welcome to the State of Your Estate podcast. Keeping it, enjoying it, passing it on. With your hosts, estate planning attorneys, Morgan and Elizabeth Allison.
Welcome to episode 9 of our podcast, State of Your Estate. I'm your co-host, Morgan Allison.
And I am Elizabeth Allison. On this episode, Morgan will explain why doing your own will is like pulling your own teeth with pliers instead of going to the dentist.
And then Beth will explain the law about forced heirship, a unique feature in Louisiana.
And in our mailbag segment, we will hear from a grandfather whose daughter is living in a lesbian relationship and won't let him see his grandson. What rights does he have? Stay tuned to find out.
Oh, hello, listeners. Today I'm going to be discussing an article that I found. I found this on the Forbes website called the Case Against Do-It-Yourself Wills. And I'm really happy that there's this article so I don't have to write this myself. You know, it's much easier to discuss what somebody else wrote than have to write the same thing myself. Now, this Forbes article, and there's a link to it in the podcast notes on the website. It's written by Deborah Jacobs. She is a lawyer and a journalist. Author of Estate Planning Smarts in 2009. And she writes for Forbes, obviously. And she wrote this article in 2010, so it's a little bit dated. And, you know, we'll discuss some of the points that's about. I think her article can basically be summed up by the quote, Timothy Calamaros, a lawyer with his own practice in South Bend, Indiana, says using a DIY will is like pulling your own teeth with a pair of pliers instead of going to the dentist. All right, so, well, yeah, and the reason that it is that bad is that you don't know what you don't know. And that's really what it sums up here. I mean, people, you know, as she points out in her article, people don't want to have to go to a lawyer. People don't want to confront, as she says, it's extremely stressful to confront one's own mortality. It's painful to spend money on estate planning because you don't live to reap the benefits, even if you know your heirs will. Actually, in our case, I think you do live to reap the benefits, for some of the benefits, because it can help out in emergency situations and situations where you're temporarily disabled, things like that. But anyway, she talks about do-it-yourself books. Basically, she boils down, there's so many things that can go wrong, from the wording of the document, required formalities for how it must be signed and witnessed before it can be valid. And we touched on this before in one of our podcasts. We were discussing handwritten wills. Can you do a handwritten will? And her answer was yes, but don't. Okay. And this is basically the same thing. This is maybe a step above a handwritten will, but not by much. And so she goes through a lot of examples about mistakes people have made. One of the first examples is actually kind of similar to our handwritten will example. Because you remember in our handwritten will, the decedent didn't really follow all the necessary formalities, so there's an argument about whether it was really a valid will or not. So here's the example of Charles Corralt, CBS News correspondent and anchor. He died in 1997, penned a note to Patricia Shannon, his mistress, for 29 years, promising to leave her 90 acres in a renovated schoolhouse near the Montana fishing retreat where they spent time together. After his death, his family and Shannon spent 6 years in court fighting over whether this note was a valid amendment to the 1994 will that a lawyer prepared, or simply a promise to revise the document that he never actually carried out. So, and so they ended up fighting for years over it. The Shannon, the mistress, got the property, but the family had to pay all the estate taxes. So there you go. Big mess, right? Let's see. So there's stories in our article about people who use forms and library books and things like that. She says that proponents of self-help products, and look, this also includes online services like Zoom, LegalZoom or whatever, and services like that. And actually, she says she doesn't want to mention those specifically. She says she won't mention specific products because she doesn't want any of them saying in promotion materials as featured in Forbes. So, because they could say exactly that, right? Even though she's trashing them. Anyway, proponents would say that it's better than a will than having no will. But they're only partially right. There are some things. So, now, here's the example that she cites, is that without one, if your children are minors and you were single or surviving parent, a court will appoint a guardian for them. State law determines how much of your belongings are distributed. In Louisiana, you can't completely appoint a guardian, or what we call a tutor, in your will. Now, you can request that, or you can suggest that so-and-so be the tutor for your children. And the court would give that a lot of weight, but it would still have to be something that would have to be decided by a court if it went to that that point. So, but here's what she points out. What the DIY folks don't usually mention, and most people don't realize, is that the rules of intestacy also apply if you foul up a DIY will. So that's basically, that's one of the things we're talking about, right, is that if you don't have if your will is invalid, so you miss something, one of the technicalities about it, then it's just out the window and they just proceed as if you'd had no will at all. And so here's what happens without a will. And so basically with a DIY will, you think you have a will. You think that everything is just fine, but you mess something up and then it just acts like you don't have a will at all. So you would have been better off. So you planned, so you know, you make your plans as if all of these things in your will are going to work, and then they don't. So that's worse. That's partially, so basically what she's saying is that's partially worse than knowing you don't have anything in place and you know exactly what's going to happen. So she talks about some of the things that people often mess up in the do-it-yourself wills. And also keep in mind, this is something she doesn't mention because, you know, she wrote this for a national audience. Louisiana, it's even more so of a problem because all of these forms, they're meant to be generic. They're meant to apply to any and all states, but they don't. If you ever read the fine print, even if they list the number, they say every state, and then you look at the states, and Louisiana is not going to be among them because Louisiana is very, very different. And so even if you had a will that would work in every state, every other state, it might still not work in Louisiana. And what happens in that case? Well, you're just out of luck. Because is it Zoom's fault? LegalZoom's fault? No. If you look at their disclaimers, they say, you know, this is not legal advice, and you know, it's not our fault if anything goes wrong, and you take full liability and all that. So that's the problem. Now she also goes into what lawyers can do for you. So here's one: a lawyer can flag issues that might be unique to your state or your situation, right? So that's what I was just talking about. And She says in some states, a living revocable trust is a preferred method for transferring assets because it can eliminate probate. I don't know about some states. In Louisiana, it's I prefer it. Now, I don't know that it's generally preferred, but I think it's better, and I think I argue successfully that is true. But, you know, opinions vary. She talks about other things that get messed up. I mean, this goes on for pages about people. Another thing that she points out is that that the laws change. And so DIY, in fact, some of these do-it-yourself sites basically tell you, you have your final will as if you're done. You know, that's what people think. They do their will and, we're done. We can relax. Well, no, it's an ongoing process. You can't just sit on it and let it gather dust on the shelf for 20 years. You have to revisit it. You have to revise it. Now, I thought this was interesting. She says that, and this is where we're different from a lot of people. She says, as much as I dislike DIY wills because of all the problems, I think estate planning lawyers, you know, which I am one of those, are partly to blame for their proliferation. They've gotten into the habit of charging some pretty hefty fees for very routine services. It cost my husband and me $4,500 for a package of basic estate planning documents, his and her wills, powers of attorney, living wills, life insurance, trust, prepared in 1997 after our son was born. By today's standards, we got ripped off. Yes, we do not charge nearly that much for what she got. And we do have a package that is about that price, actually. But you get a whole lot more than what she got for that price. So please, please, for everybody's sake, for your sake, for your family's sake, don't do the online will. Don't try to do it yourself. Just, you know, give us a call. It's not going to cost you anything to call me. All right. You ask for us to sit down and really get any work done. There is going to be a fee involved. But give us a call, all right? Check out the website. Give us a call, 985-853-8557, and find out how we can help you with a reasonably priced estate plan that avoids these kinds of pitfalls.
Assistance with successions, probate, estate planning, and elder law issues. Call Allison and Allison at 985-853-8557 or visit AllisonEstatePlanning.com.
Louisiana is the only state that has provisions for forced heirship. In a nutshell, this means that sometimes you have to leave a portion of your estate to one or more of your children. The provisions for forced heirship are found in the Civil Code, Article 1493, and it defines forced heirs as descendants of the first degree who at the time of the death of the decedent are 23 years of age or younger, or descendants of the first degree of any age who, because of mental incapacity or physical infirmity, are permanently incapable of taking care of their persons or administering their estates at the time of the death of the decedent. There are further definitions that include the children of forced heirs if the forced heir predeceases their parent and would have been 23 or younger at the time of the parent's death, or if their child is disabled. Now, a descendant of the first degree means a direct child, so not a niece or a nephew, and not a grandchild. Though again, a grandchild could be considered a forced heir under a special provision. Now, if there is one or more forced heirs, then the part of the estate that has to be set aside for forced heirs is called The Forced Portion. In Article 1495, it sets the amount of the forced portion. It is not going to be more than half of the estate, no matter how many forced heirs there are. So if you're ready to start your estate plan and need to provide for forced heirs, we can help you. Call us at 985-853-8557 or visit our website at allisonestateplanning.com.
The mailbag, where we answer questions about the law from you, our listeners.
Today, we have a non-estate planning question about grandparents' visitation rights. Here's our question this week. What are our visitation rights for our grandson? So the question goes, my grandson and my daughter have lived with us since the day they were born. Our grandson is 2. My daughter is now in a lesbian relationship. Her girlfriend was also living with us for about a year. They decided to move out, and now the girlfriend is doing everything possible to keep our grandson from us. And by the way, her father gets to see my grandson.
I remember in the 90s when the grandparents' rights issue was hot, and the statute giving visitation rights to grandparents was passed here. But I don't think it's going to help. I don't think it gives as many rights as people think.
Right. The statute is Revised Statute Title 9, 334, and its provisions giving a grandparent a right to visitation mostly require that your child, the grandchild's parent, be either deceased, incarcerated, or interdicted. It does not normally give visitation if your child doesn't want to allow it.
But there is an odd paragraph at the end of the statute that might apply in your case. It's a big stretch, though.
Right. For that paragraph, which is 344 subsection D, to apply, there have to be parents of a minor child of a marriage that have lived apart for 6 months. And there have to be extraordinary circumstances. A specific example of extraordinary circumstances is given, and that is that the parent is abusing drugs.
Now, a lawyer could argue that in this case, the parents have been apart for 6 months. And the fact that they were never married is not relevant. A judge might buy that. It is a stretch, though, because there is an argument against that interpretation, and that is that the statute has a separate paragraph for married parents and one for unmarried parents. So it's not like the legislature didn't consider a difference between the two. I just don't see what difference it makes in this case if the parents are married or not married. So a judge might not either, but it is a problem. But the extraordinary circumstances part is even harder to overcome. I don't believe that in today's political climate, a lesbian relationship would be found to be an extraordinary circumstance. If your daughter is abusing drugs, though, it would be worth a shot. So do you have a legal question that you would like to hear answered on our show? It doesn't even have to be estate planning related. You can email your questions to morgan@allisonattorneys.com or record your question on the podcast page on our website, allisonestateplanning.com, and your voice message might be heard on our show. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening to our show.
Next episode, we will discuss disability issues in estate planning.
Bye. Bye.
The latest episodes of this podcast, informative articles, and special exclusive offers from Allison and Allison and other providers delivered to your email inbox. Subscribe to our email newsletter at allisonestateplanning.com/newsletter.